Okay, so if you guys all want to introduce... This, by the way, is the writer's meeting, a writer's meeting. We have this bi-weekly thing where we just sit around and talk about writing and about anything that we're watching and any particular...
Projects.
Yeah, that we're... projects that we're working on or things that we've seen that we liked structurally or... You know, it's very open-ended. So if you guys would introduce yourselves.
Okay, fine. My name's Elizabeth Stanton.
This is the Elizabeth from the Comic Book Blues episode. So if you guys haven't seen that episode, haven't heard that episode, you should go ahead and do that now so you can know her intimately. Go, Elizabeth, go.
Is that it?
You can just say your name. And
okay, and this is James Van Fleet.
Yes, also known as Jim.
Yeah, Jim.
And
informally.
And I'm Alan. And this is the first writing class episode. So, how are you guys doing today?
Good.
This week?
I'm good. I am also well.
Don't look at it.
Finally saw Stand By Me.
What's that?
Which I had not seen. Stand By Me with...
the Rob Reiner picture?
Based on the body of King with River Phoenix... Will Wheaton,
actually, Corey. Four people who all turned out being the stars to greater and lesser degrees.
Yeah, poor River Phoenix, that was too bad.
Oh, yeah, that was true.
But he's so good. I was really just blown away by how good all four of those kids were.
Yeah.
I've never seen any films with him in it. Yeah, no, I'm never...
you've probably seen Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, I guess, but...
That's
just kind of a tease at
the
beginning.
Yeah, he's barely in it. Does that really
a good display of his...
Yeah.
Really natural ability is like I was just completely blown away by him in the whole movie. Will Wheaton too, like I think people give
him
shit.
Who is that?
Him
Star Trek?
Yeah, the kid from Star Trek. Mm-hmm. I feel like people like he's embraced the whole like.
Yeah, he's become kind of a pop culture commentator anymore. Mm-hmm. I think so.
But he was very very good in the movie, like a very good dramatic actor, which I didn't know frankly because I didn't really watch Star Trek: The Next Generation much either. So
all four of the kids are very good in that movie. It's a movie that kind of really depends on them being. You know, just having long scenes where they just talk and behave and respond. And
it's mostly
that,
man. The bulk of the film is the kids.
What's that movie about?
They basically, the little Jerry O'Connell basically just kicks off with, you guys want to see a dead body?
Oh!
And it's their little trek out to see a kid their age who got killed by a train or whatever. And just sort of the journey.
You know, they kind of grow up a little bit. They learn a little bit about each other. Life lessons learned. Mm-hmm. Is it? But yeah,
Kiefer
actually.
Sutherland is a mean bully in it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah.
So when he was younger. Maybe?
Yeah. Lost Boys era. It's really good. It's
back before the Jack Bauer days.
The Jack Bauer days. But it was very very good. And of course, there's the girl's answer to Stand By Me, which is Now and Then. Shut your mouth.
That wasn't my mouth.
It's different. it's good. It's what Stand By Me is for boys, because boys go on their little adventures, something like that. Now and Then was for girls, dealt with similar issues for girls.
So the whole film Stand By Me is essentially just the kids going to find a dead body, to see a dead body?
That's the plot, but there's more to it. You get background on the kids' personal lives and how they interact with each other.
Isn't there some sort of conflict that kicks off the
amongst themselves, really?
What's the, the twist or whatever that happened? Inciting incident, that's what it's called.
The inciting incident is the one that she already said, which is that Jerry O'Connell comes in and says, guys, you want to see a dead body? And then it becomes kind of just a very low-key adventure where it's more about the kids just talking and dealing with each other I don't know, kind of it's kind of one of those threshold things where it's about them becoming a little bit more mature. It's very well done. Interesting because now Rob Reiner is trying to use that movie as a way to advertise this new movie he's making called Flipped, which is going to be in theaters, and that's about young love.
But it seems completely different, though. I mean,
it does. But I think they're just kind of trafficking in the whole.
Remember how much you like Stand By Me? You'll probably like Flipped.
Exactly.
Except you won't because it looks awful.
Rob Reiner really hasn't directed a good film in a while, and
that's not true. Haven't you seen what's it called? That film with.
With the Bucket List, I have not seen.
Yeah,
but my understanding was that it was not that good.
Jack Nicholson and Morgan Freeman. How could he go wrong? Two Oscar-nominated.
You could.
Okay. I don't know. I haven't seen it.
Well, that's probably why it was successful too, because they're two older people, and the target's a demographic that almost nobody wants to target in Hollywood.
Yeah,
it's kind of like in some way that, like, you know, if you have a movie like Sex and the City, you've got that market on women cornered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to make a lot of money off of it.
Yeah.
You can only pull that trick about once a year, though. So it all depends.
Yeah.
So.
So, in your opinion, it was a good movie?
Yeah, very good movie. I finally saw Forrest Gump as well, which I did not
get. You had never seen that movie?
I had never seen
it. In the 90s. It's almost 20 years old.
That's interesting, because those are both movies that are very much about, like, kind of this nostalgic kind of Americana.
And I, like, Stand By Me much better, because I feel like Forrest Gump... I wasn't engaged in Forrest Gump as a character.
Really?
And... it just, everything felt like history light. Like, do you remember the 60s? Yeah, remember this and that? And to me, that's like it is.
It's very much like an abridged approach to the baby boomer generation.
And I think it's kind of overrated.
Really?
Lieutenant Dan, you got legs. Ah, shut up.
Wow, that was... That's...
I found Forrest endearing and mirthful.
It's a classic. It's a classic film that you just bashed. I don't know.
Because it's a classic doesn't mean I have to like it.
The irony is that movie like won Best Picture in 1994, but then like Pulp Fiction nowadays is much more.
I was just about to say that's a movie that's widely
regarded. And then also Shawshank came out that same time.
Which you finally saw all the way through too. I did a lot of movies this week.
You did a lot.
What do you think of Shawshank?
I like Shawshank.
It's good.
Even though I don't know people. I feel like people have similar views with it that maybe they have a Forrest Gump.
Liked Shawshank Redemption.
I like Shawshank.
And yet you disliked Forrest
yes.
Gump. Despite the fact that Forrest Gump is a genuinely good movie and Shawshank is just overrated.
Alan, how dare you for a contrary perspective unaccepted.
I think Shawshank is very good. Because even though it focused very heavily on hope and things like that, which can get very corny for me, because like, hold on to your hope.
Yeah.
To me, it was on the subtler side. It wasn't like Andy Dufresne kept clinging to hope for 30 years in prison, and I'm going to bring that up every time we cut to my voiceover narration. I just thought it was interesting. And the prison thing, you know, to me there was much more about that. Just Andy's thing. It was about Morgan Freeman's character and the other people in the jail with him, like the old guy who leaves and can't handle life outside because he's just so used to jail and things like that. So that sort of institutionalization.
Mm-hmm.
That was more interesting to me than Andy's journey. But I also like smooth criminals, and Andy was a smooth criminal in terms of the bookkeeping thing where he worked for huge spoilers in this story, where he worked for the warden.
If anyone needs spoilers for this movie, they need to be slapped in the face.
But I can be won over so easily in movies to a degree by smooth criminals. Is that what I could call them?
Are you a fan of the song as well?
Yes.
Saying as that's not surprising. Well, it's been a long time since I've seen The Shawshank Redemption. I remember thinking it was really sappy the last time I saw it.
It is a little sappy, but I found Forrest Gump much sappier to a degree where I didn't like it at all.
I don't know. I'll have to revisit The Shawshank. The only thing that I remember from Shawshank Redemption and not liking was the scene when he, for the purposes of this episode, let's say he attempts to escape the prison with the rock, and he times the rock, the pounding of the rock on the piece of iron with the lightning, and somehow he's able to smash open an iron pipe with the rock. I never bought that. Like,
it's a rusty iron pipe.
It's funny too, because there's like also a continuity error with that, where he knocks the pipe open, then all of a sudden it overflows and shoots into his face, but then when he puts his flashlight in the pipe, there's nothing in there. It's funny too because the first time you see it, you don't even care at all. It's kind of the same way you don't care about, like, how was he able to put the poster back up after he was in the tunnel.
I didn't think of that.
Somebody pointed out, I like to read about the movies after I've seen them, somebody pointed out that if you watch when he's digging, he only lifts up the bottom two corners.
Right, that's what I figured.
So it'll fall flat.
In theory.
I mean, I guess it must be weighted or something, but even then, it's kind of...
Yeah, it's a little hard to believe it wouldn't flap.
But again,
I mean, it's like, you know, if you're on board at that point, you're not going to care about those little things.
Have you read the book? Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, actually, I thought the movie was better than the book.
Wow.
I thought that the one thing that Darabont is good with all of his adaptations of Stephen King, I say all three of them, is that he's really good at them, not just cutting out the fat, but kind of focusing what the conflict is. So King can sometimes be a little bit more digressive in how he approaches the story and find little details and things, and then. Like, for example, in The Mist, Stephen King really goes to... he doesn't worry too much about this. There's this indication that there's a government science experiment, but it's just an indication. There's just a hint that something like that may be involved in The Mist. I'm sorry.
Oh, in The Mist, okay.
I'm just trying to think of an example off the top of my head. And then what Darabont did was he went back and not only made that a more focused element of the story, he built a new character out of that, and then the new character was able to interact with the group in a more dynamic way, and in a way that also kind of raised the dramatic stakes. And then in The Shawshank Redemption, what he did was he took three different wardens and combined them all. Darabont did. Okay. He took three different ones and combined them all into this one character, and then gave Dufresne much more of a significant antagonist. Mm-hmm. And so there are a lot of... he's actually pretty savvy when he's adapting some of that material, so I think that he does... He made The Shawshank Redemption into a better story. And that is kind of weird to say. It's when someone can take a book and then improve upon it. That's very rare. Usually they'll kind of... It feels reductive. And... not as, I don't know, frequently not as sophisticated. They try too much to streamline it. But for some reason, when he streamlines it, it seems to improve it.
Have either of you seen the film The Road or read the book The Road?
No,
I've read the book, and I was just very impressed with it. It's a downer.
Yeah, it's very depressing.
It's, that was a happy book, damn it.
It's never actually happy. It's pretty dark all the way through. No. If you like the book, I actually thought the film was better than the book.
Well, I'm interested in seeing the film because Viggo Mortensen is a very good actor.
Yeah, it was a really good film. It was really, really good. It takes all the good parts of the book, namely when stuff actually happens. And
yeah, there is a lot in the book devoted to description and like in movies.
Yeah.
You really just can't. I mean, you can develop that just by scenery and setting and all that, but you can't really have them. He walked down the road with the sun, and the sun asked, "Dad, are we going to light the fire?" And the skies were gray. You know, you don't say, and you just show the skies being gray and all that stuff. And
the show don't tell.
Yeah, and it's just the inherent difference between the mediums. So.
Right, and the book too was extremely repetitive too. Like they kept having the same.
Oh,
kind of conversations.
Sure, and towards a very specific purpose, don't you think? I mean, like, the repetition is the way that.
A while, to be honest,
I mean, that's you know the life that they're living, and that's what they have to deal with.
It certainly pulled that off well. But I mean, I thought that the movie was also able to do that without it being tiring. I thought it was better. Well, you haven't seen the film, so you can't
I haven't seen the film. I can only vouch for the book, which I thought. For me, it became engrossing. It wasn't immediate. I mean, immediately I could tell that it was well written, but it became engrossing as it went along.
To me,
anyway.
I saw the film first, and then I read the book, expecting the book to be much better. I guess that might be why. If I had read the book, that can have an
effect, too, because I...
Do you, in general, or either of you, prefer to try and read a book before you see the movie version of it?
If it looks like a movie that I want to see, lots of times I will try and read the book ahead of time. I can't say with certainty why right now. I'm kind of at a blank right now. The movie is its own thing, and I'm sure it's probably the same for you guys, which is that, you know, fidelity is secondary to how good the film is on its own terms. So,
this is my sense. So, like, just even with the Harry Potter, everyone flips out about every little detail that's left out. I'm like, you guys understand it's a 700-page book, and you cannot fit everything into the movie.
Unless
you make a 4-hour movie.
I was angry with the sixth movie, because the sixth book was so good, and the sixth movie was okay. Like, it wasn't.
Yeah, I didn't love the sixth movie.
It should have been the best film.
Some of
the... You got a tan, Elizabeth?
Nice, more sunburned.
Seem darker, yes.
No, I'm just sunburned.
Oh. Is it working here?
I don't know. I just keep forgetting to put on sunscreen. For the record, for those who've never seen me in person on the podcast, I'm pale as hell.
She's
mostly Irish and not meant for the sun. So I
think she's
California.
Overstating it a little bit. I think I'm much paler than she is. So although Jim is also pretty pale as well, but
Me and Sunlight don't get along.
Me too, me too. In fact, all three of us, we can tell that we're all writers. Because we stay indoors drawing.
Well, and everyone always asks me, well, doesn't your red turn to tan? No.
That's all that cancer slowly growing, all this, by the way,
we will probably cut that out. That is okay.
We can get rid of it. Doesn't have anything to do with
it. Hey, you know what's fun to talk about when you're writing? Skin cancer.
It can be inspiration. All right, how about you, Jim? Have you seen anything lately this week? Or have you read anything? I forgot if you read anything.
I
started the Craig Ferguson memoir.
Is that the one that I gave you?
No. Craig Ferguson's American on Purpose.
Yeah, I thought I had a copy of that.
No, I bought my own copy.
I'm not planning on reading. Oh, you should
have asked me. Sorry, I didn't know. But it's good. It's a quick read because it's just kind of written in this good storyteller, little teen,
growing. Is it a biography?
Yeah, it's his memoir of growing up in Scotland and his alcoholism and then his rehabilitation and then final move to America.
And does he talk about his until the Drew Carey show at all?
I haven't gotten that far. So he's a kid in the rough, tough Glasgow, 70s Glasgow.
I see. How old is that guy, like 60?
He's almost 50, I think.
Wow, he's old. I'm sorry,
you were saying? I've read and watched quite a few things. I watched a Kiyoshi Kurosawa film called Doppelganger, which was interesting. It was about it starts out like kind of like a horror thriller where you learn that sometimes people, encounter their doppelgangers. And then the main character, though, when he encounters his, the doppelganger just wants to kind of do what he does but be better at it. So it's kind of like instead of being about an evil twin, it's more about like kind of these two clashing personalities. One is more ego, one is more id. And this id one, I think that he eventually kind of takes over. But it's interesting because then it becomes a very, very low-key kind of satire comedy almost. It switches gears, and it's interesting too, especially if you are familiar with Kiyoshi Kurosawa, because he did a lot of very traditional pulp movies like Cure and Seance and Pulse, and they're like straight up thrillers. This is all in Japan. He also did this recent film called Tokyo Sonata, which got released stateside and got some good reviews, and is probably the first of his that's really kind of been noticed by the critical establishment. I mean, they appreciate his other films, but they're kind of genre, so it's interesting to see him do a straight drama. But so I just saw Doppelganger, and then in addition to that, I saw and then here's Evan Starkman. I saw Evan Starkman. I feel like I saw something, another film, and I can't remember exactly what it was. So clearly, it left a good impression.
Was it a good movie?
I think if you know who the director is and you have an appreciation for that kind of cinema, you might be able to get something out of it. It's definitely not a great movie by any stretch of the imagination. I thought it was interesting and intriguing, but I don't know if it was necessarily a really a good film. It's certainly one that really demands patience from the viewer. So if you don't
What's
have
the movie called?
It's called Doppelganger.
Okay.
So, but
it's an Asian film, you said?
Yeah, it's an Asian film from 2003, I believe it was.
Okay.
So I saw that, and then I know I watched another one, but I can't remember, so I'll just not worry about thinking about that. Maybe it'll come back to me. I've been reading some more Paradise Lost, and it's still tough to get through because it's so dense.
Is that the classic one?
Yeah,
that goes from heaven.
That talks about the fall of the angels from Satan's perspective, and it's about Satan. Like,
why is it so hard to?
It's very densely written in that a lot of the words that are used are obscure, or they're ones that are have a different context from the time. And then in addition to that, he really loads it with a lot of references and all that. So like, if you're not familiar with Charybdis, you're going to be confused by a line. Or if you don't know much about like hierarchies of angels, there are going to be some things that are going to be a bit confusing. So, but I mean, it's worth it to get through, because then once you do, you have a really strong appreciation for how much work he put into it and all that. So I've been reading that, and then I've been watching. I finished Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 1 and Avatar the Last Airbender season 1.
Oh, okay.
And I'm working
through. I thought you were going to see the movie. I was like,
no.
Has anyone seen that film?
I don't.
It's kind of like the whole thing with watching the book before you see the adaptation.
Right.
Like to watch the television series before I see the film. And the film's gotten such poor reviews, but that actually makes me a little bit curious. Cause,
yeah.
That's why
It's such a horrible instinct to be like, wow, is it as bad as they say? Because, I mean, it's so rarely that it's entertainingly bad. Lots of times you're just sitting there thinking, yeah, it's pretty awful.
And it sounds like it's one of those. I mean, it got panned like 100 times worse than Twilight.
Well, the show is really, really funny. And I just wasn't expecting... I was expecting that it would be this good kind of martial arts little thing for kids, but it's really, really clever and really, really funny. And I'm just, like, just constantly surprised by it, too, because sometimes it'll be, like, very kind of low-key and serious, and sometimes it'll have this almost, like, Chuck Jones kind of speed to it, where it's, like, really fast and, like, people are, like, stretching and contorting with their reactions to things, and it's just very... I mean, it's so funny, because it goes from almost, like, seemingly being realistic on... and then, well, it's, I mean, like, it's an American anime.
Right.
I mean, I don't even know if anime is the correct term for it. I mean, it very much deals with that kind of thing, but also, I mean, like I'd say it's closer to something like Hayao Miyazaki than something like, you know, Neon Evangelion, whatever, all those, like Cowboy Bebop and those kind of things. I'd say it's much closer to Evangelion.
Yes.
It's much closer to Hayao Miyazaki, and then I think there are times where that's very deliberate, and they're really trying to evoke certain images from him. And it's very good.
You've seen the whole first season of Avatar? I started watching it. I'm on like a third episode. Is it good? You said that the show is good. It gets better.
I don't know. I think it stays it. I mean, at least I'm already working through some of the second season, and I think it maintains its balance. If you think it's okay now, you'll probably think it's okay in the second season.
Yeah, like it's,
I mean, if it's not hooking you, then it's not. And I mean, it's definitely a show for children, but also I think that it's just extremely well done. I'm just constantly impressed by it. And it's very lush animation and very well, the voice acting is great. I mean, it's just, it's a hero's quest. Come on, you know, how can you not get on board for something like that?
Have you heard of a show called Naruto or something like that?
Yeah, I've heard of Naruto. I've heard of a lot of those. I mean, Naruto. Like, I'm a little bit reticent to dive into anime. Every now and again, there's a new threshold of nerddom, and I'm always very hesitant to cross the line. I was like that with Battlestar Galactica, and I was like that.
Look how wrong you were about that show.
Well, it wasn't that I was wrong. I mean, like, I was right away, because now I'm part of a very, very small group of people who will know about the 12 Cylon models. You know, and it's really not something that most people engage in conversation about. But now I'm part of this elite group who can say, like, I really love that reveal in season 3's episode Revelations when we learned who the final four were.
I think that Evan's planning on
Do you think it had a less than great ending to the whole series? Because I haven't seen it. Everyone tells me it's incredible, but the final season is like, they say it's a downer.
Well, the final season, I mean, it's a downer intentionally in a lot of ways, because, I mean, the heroes really go through a lot of crap, and it's really hard for them. And there are a couple times where you think they have victories, and those victories just really kind of flip back on them. I think that the final episode... I think it's a lot like Lost's final episode, where there is like something that happens towards the very end of the series finale that doesn't necessarily cohere with everything that's come before. It's a big leap, and it seems to suggest that there was something else, like they had something in mind that was other than what she thought it was about. Mm-hmm. And I thought that in both shows they kind of make this grab that I don't think they really earn necessarily, and I don't think they quite are able to pull it off. And it's something that's happening on a very kind of symbolic, thematic level. And both times I think they kind of screw it up. But also what it shares in common with Lost is that the series finale is incredibly satisfying on a visceral level. There's a lot of great action. There's a lot of great acting, of course. I mean, that's a great opportunity for, you know, characters to grandstand and make big speeches. Mm-hmm. And, you know, oh, damn it, one last time. Time for one last battle with these silence. You know, fucking the Trey Parker. Is it Trey Parker or Matt Stone in South Park who does that kind of voice? Oh, God, we've got to stop these aliens. They always do that same voice.
I'm never sure who's who on that show.
Yeah. But I understand frustrations on both of them, but I think that the BSG finale is, for the most part, I think it's satisfying. I have to admit that, like, there's stuff that happened in it that makes you want to pull out your hair and say, no, damn it, that's not what this was all about. It was about this, not this. Mm-hmm. You know, so.
Yeah, I read an article, I get Entertainment Weekly for free. Mm-hmm. They had an interview with the guys, the creators of Lost, and they were like, what do you say to people who didn't like your finale? They're like, we don't have to justify it to anybody. I was like, I think you do, personally.
Well, like, on the one hand, I don't think they have to.
No.
At all, you know? I mean, the art is what that's their communication. And frankly, like, all these creators who are doing podcasts and interacting with fans and all that, it kind of worries me, because it's like, it becomes a supplementary or auxiliary part of the communication that is, like, Lost. Mm-hmm. I mean, Lost is very much the artist talking to us about what they believe and what they want, the story they want to tell, the types of characters they find fascinating. I mean, that's how they're talking with us. That's the communication that's happening. So when they start talking on podcasts about, like, well, you should watch this scene very carefully for this, this is what we were trying to do there. Is it fair to say this? It's fair to say that. And it's like, stop it, because if your art isn't communicating that successfully, then that's a problem. That's not something...
They did say that, like, you know, we laid out what we wanted to lay out, mm-hmm. and it is open. Some of it is open to interpretation, sort of how you read a few different things. I thought the way they ended it was pretty clear in terms of everything, and they were like, and people who want answers were not focusing on the journey, which was the point of their show. And I did want a few more answers for some things, well, not every little thing.
I hate that focus. I mean, it's true. Like, I do agree that, you know, it's about the journey, but I don't necessarily like that excuse.
But they were talking more about the people who were like the super minutia of just like every little thing needs an answer. Like, why was this doing this?
Oh, sure. There are a lot of smaller questions that I thought were completely superfluous. And then also, I don't know if you guys saw, but they actually somebody already posted it online illegally, of course. This epilogue that's going to be
on the
and what's interesting about it is that it does essentially what they tried to not do in the mm-hmm. final season, which is that it just goes down a checklist. Well, and it goes down a checklist of things that really aren't that important.
Yeah, it didn't really answer anything.
It literally is kind of like they said, okay, well, here are 10 things that fans clamor about. So here's this, here's this, here's this, here's this, here's this. And some of them don't even necessarily follow with what the series has told us so far. It was just they were trying to pretty much put a button on all of those.
And
exactly. And it was a pretty graceless info dump, I thought. It was just...
So the commentary for it's Across the Sea, the mm-hmm. one with Allison and Jenny, which was... lot of people either loved it or hated it. I personally liked it.
I liked it too.
Because I thought it was, you know, like... if you wanted some answers about the island, here you go. Yeah. You know, but it did it in an interesting way.
Yeah.
They said that their commentary on it is interesting, but their commentary on it, like the creator commentary, might be an issue with, like you said, with the podcast, where if they feel the need to comment on it in a way.
Well, I'm just curious to see, not necessarily. I don't want them. I wouldn't want them to clarify anything that happens in the episode. Mm-hmm. Like you said, that's what the episode's for. It'd be interesting to see their opinions on how they approached it, because mm-hmm. that episode is very different from the rest of Lost. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very distinct, and I think that that's something that even if you loved it or hated it, I think it deserves a lot of consideration.
Yeah,
there's a tendency with television, I'm sure you guys have all experienced this, there's a very knee-jerk reaction to it. You watch a TV episode and you respond, and that's really increased a lot with internet culture, where it's like, you know, a minute after it's over, it's like, well, that didn't explain anything.
Yeah. To the Twitter.
To the Twitter, I must make my opinions known. Grab your pitchforks. You're going to storm the Darlington website.
that's the problem with movies now, too, everyone leaps on Twitter the second, like, now they're less even focused even on opening weekend to almost opening day because everybody hops on Twitter.
Well, I think it really reduces the whole thing to a very consumptive experience where it's just like digest and you either, you know, appreciate it or you vomit something back up. I mean, it's like it's all very...
There are some people who can pull that off really well. Like I know that the AV Club. Do you guys ever read the AV Club on The Onion?
All the time.
AV Club is only tangentially related to The Onion. They have an affiliation with them. Basically. Oh, okay. That's what it comes down to. But they have very good writers who do a good job at like talking about what these character arcs are suggesting and like. Individual shots and things like that. It's, I mean, like as far as like quick reactions goes, it's incredibly impressive. I mean, Alan Siebenwall is another critic who does a good job of reviewing quickly, but also in a very intelligent way, and just kind of like, I mean, it seems like that maybe 5% of blogging in terms of like TV and film and all that, and then the rest of it is people going, "That was stupid. I don't like that at all. I was confused. That was lame."
Oh, gee, what the hell?
And also, I don't know if you guys read that, a lot of it is just plot synopsis. So then what happened was Ben went into the forest.
Yeah.
And Ben was like, "I'm going to do this now." And then, like, at the very end, they'll have, like, two lines. Overall, I thought it was a pretty good episode. B+, what do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Post in the comments.
A lot of film reviews are like that, too, I've noticed. I think that Roger Ebert does that sometimes, where he just summarizes it and then goes, or
there's sometimes, and then there are also sometimes where it gets a little bit.
I try not to do that. I try to always give an opinion from the get go and not ever summarize. But that's just me. Anyway, we should move this on. Evan. This is Evan Starkman who's joined us.
Hi.
Yeah, there's Evan. He's all the way down there. So if you can't hear him all that well,
is probably blocking his
I don't think so. Audio travels all around. So how about you, Evan? Have you seen anything interesting this week or read anything?
Recently I saw a pretty good Jeff Bridges movie, I think I told you about.
Oh, is that the one with the serial killer or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, it had some plot holes, but it's a very different role for him. It's him and Kiefer Sutherland. Are you familiar with this? Yeah.
I haven't seen it, but I've heard a lot about it.
Yeah, he it's an off role for him. He plays a psychopath, basically, who kidnaps Sandra Bullock. For his girlfriend and
overdue.
And, he has like a Swedish accent in it that takes a good 20 minutes of getting used to warm up to hear the dude talking like that. But I got used to it the same way that I get used to a shitty Al Pacino accent. And it was a fun kind of Twilight Zone-y suspense movie. So that was good.
Have you seen the original one?
No, but I was told that I should.
It's interesting because the original one was directed by the same director.
Oh.
And then he came to America and remade it. And he remade it, but he changed the ending because his original ending was very different.
How did it end originally?
Well, I mean, I don't know if I should say.
I don't want to.
Recording, I mean, but certainly, well, certainly the ending is not as American.
If
you've
seen
Bravo's
100 Scariest
Movie Moments,
if you've seen Bravo's 100 Scariest Movie Moments, it ruins the original Vanishing for you, and it ruins about 100 other movies for you as well.
Well, sure, but at the same time, I think
so. You shouldn't watch Bravo.
Don't watch Bravo.
Well, yeah, just in general.
I was like, oh, this is kind of a cool idea. I was like, wait a minute, they're just ruining 100 movies I want to see.
I felt kind of embarrassed because I watched that night. I knew all 100 of them. I'd seen all of them before, so I was just looking at it going, I don't agree with that.
It
was certainly not something where I was like, oh, that entices me to watch this. I can't imagine it enticing people. It probably made people think, oh, great, they've just shown me the best parts of all the movies that I've seen.
And it's true. Unfortunately, it's not, like, there were ones on that list. I was like, I haven't seen that yet.
Do you remember what happens in The Vanishing?
I don't know if it's the exact, it was at least part of it, but I don't know if it was the final ending that they show.
That's pretty much.
Oh, okay. I don't want to.
Is that the movie where this guy and his girlfriend go somewhere and then his girlfriend disappears and he has to?
Yeah.
Oh, and there's a serial killer. Okay.
But you could also be thinking of movie with Snake Plissken. What's his name?
Russell. Breakdown. Actually, yeah, that's right. Now that you point that out, they're very similar films.
Yeah.
I mean, like at least in Breakdown actually isn't too bad. I mean, it's not great, but I mean, if you can't get enough of it.
I thought the same thing of The Vanishing, you know, they're not perfect, they've got some questionable, plot moves, but they're fun.
So supposedly, I haven't seen either film, but I heard that the original is better than the new one.
Actually, from what I understand, critical reaction to the remake was very volatile. Nobody liked it, but that was also because they kind of gotten pampered by a film that was a lot more offbeat.
Mm.
You know, and critics love that.
Yeah.
That's true. All right. I saw the film, the 1986 film with Tom Cruise called Legend, where he plays the...
Oh, my God. I used to watch Legend all the time when I was a kid.
Tim Curry plays like a devil character.
And... It was Sloane from Ferris Bueller's Day Off as the princess.
That girl was gorgeous.
I fucking love Legend.
It was really good. It was interesting.
It was a fond childhood memory.
It was, yeah. I thought that it had a lot of good scenes. I love the scene where the villain tries to seduce the girl with a dance.
Yeah,
and she, that was awesome. That was really
like her costume change.
Yeah,
like,
that was so cool.
I haven't seen Legend.
Oh, yeah, I've seen Legend.
How about you, Evan? Have you seen it?
No, I've seen
movie number 3000.
It's just weird. It's like a prelude to Lord of the Rings films in some ways.
Yeah, it's like that. It's got a little...
Yeah,
it's
like its own story with like demons and
goblins. There's like
and
only two
unicorns.
There's only two unicorns left, and it's a male female unicorn and stuff. And the evil Tim Curry devil wants to kill him.
Yeah, because the horns are
magical
or whatever. And if you kill
a fucking unicororn, of course it's magical.
Obviously,
but
it sounds like
if you
devil's
kill the
magical too. It sounds like he's already got that.
He is, but he gets a boost.
Yeah,
it's like
and
a 5-hour energy drink, but it's a unicorn horn.
Supposedly, if he kills the unicorn, he's the Lord of Darkness,
yeah.
And he wants to eliminate light, like all light, all day. So by killing the unicorns, all day vanishes, and there will be eternal frost, eternal night. Don't know why, not explain, it's a fantasy film.
The movie starts off, it is like springtime and pretty ethereal, and all the sunlight flowing everywhere is very beautiful. And then one of the unicorns goes down, and suddenly it's like a blizzard hits the whole thing, and it's dark.
It's weird. It's a really bizarre film.
Like all those fantasies, it's about, you know, they want to cover the world in darkness, and I think, well, what are they going to do once everything's covered in darkness and they've won? Are they just going
to
have like orc parties?
That's all they want.
Where they can barely
the
see anything because it's pitch black, and of course they, you know, devour all the resources. It's kind of like The Lion King was kind of interesting like that, because he actually saw what happened when someone like that won, and
it's
just, you know,
man,
it was just
everywhere.
Stupid and everyone was like screwed, and then like, well, it seemed like a good idea at the time. I don't know.
I wanted to be
dark, so I mean, what could the consequences be? It's great.
I don't think they think ahead.
So have you seen anything else besides The Mansion?
Let me think.
The American Vanishing.
I saw Wall Street again, which
cool.
I did see the end of Breaking Bad, third season.
Don't spoil it. I'm still in the second season.
Oh, so have you gone through the whole series?
Completely caught up. Yeah.
Oh man.
I'll just say for both of you, without spoiling a thing.
Gas.
If, you know, you're only vaguely interested in watching it or not at all, still watch it.
It's good. It's a good show.
It is. It gets so intense.
I don't know where it is on the queue.
End of that third season, just...
Oh, man. They are so good at those openings.
Right, yeah.
Those little openings that do... Because I thought one of the most intense things I've seen in, like, the past year or two was that one opening with the little kid on the bike.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it just doesn't go where you think it'll go.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I'm trying to keep it vague.
Good. Cool. Look forward to watching.
Then Bryan Cranston wakes up and says it was all a dream. And then he checks the top.
Like, I would just say that it just keeps getting better and better, too.
Which is good.
One episode midway through the third season, and then the end just like.
Oh, you're probably talking about One Minute, right?
Gosh, I needed to take a break for a few days after that.
Oh no, I was physically exhausted. I almost had to lie down.
Is it an hour long or half hour?
It's an hour long show. But man, you can just breeze through them if you get them on DVD.
Except for that one episode, apparently, because it's really intense.
Oh, man. Okay, that one you need a little bit of time
to
recuperate. You need to cool down with a cigarette or something.
Interesting. Eric, because so far, I'm the beginning of the second season, and it's good, but it's not that
intense.
Well,
I mean, it should be getting more intense. Have you gotten to the one where they're with that grandpa?
Yeah.
In the Mexican place?
But the...
Yeah, with the dude.
Yeah, I
saw that. Wasn't
that
pretty suspenseful?
Yeah, yeah, it was awesome. That
okay,
was
okay, cool. I just...
No, I think the last episode that I saw was the episode where... I'm going to spoil it for listeners. No, it was the episode where that girl that
Aaron
guy
Paul.
Is... Yeah, he is dating the black hair. She is ashamed of him in front of her father, and her mm-hmm. father comes in. I don't remember what else happens on that episode, but that's the only thing that I remember.
Oh gosh, yeah.
So it's like the fourth or fifth episode of the second season.
You know,
it's not that.
I'm not saying that there's an intense, you know, moment every episode, but it builds
yeah,
up
yeah. No,
to
no, no.
Insane the, you know.
Well, also, I mean, I think that it's good because then when that intensity happens, it really,
yeah, yeah.
it really contrasts.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of really good like family drama and all that,
right,
and it's
yeah.
like well acted and well executed and all that. And then when something really big happens, it feels really big.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels
yeah.
like an intrusion.
Yep.
You know. So yeah, for sure. No, I'm glad that you've gotten
two more
that.
Things about that.
Yeah.
You had to love. I think it was in 1 minute the prologue with the grandpa when he's younger.
Mm-hmm.
okay.
Great.
Cool.
That was
cool. Great. Look forward to seeing that.
And. Couple, I think it's that episode The Fly, which is
mm-hmm.
you know, that kind of weird one-off one.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I truly think, having watched them both around the same time, I think that the writer of that copped a couple of elements from The Vanishing, because if you'll remember, Jesse's looking at the cigarettes with his girlfriend's lipstick on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's from The Vanishing.
Oh.
And then also in The Vanishing,
hmm.
Jeff Bridges is like, he's like this chemistry teacher.
And
there's a fly buzzing around, and he gives this whole like little speech to a girl about how the fly is a contaminant, and that's what Bryan Cranston is raving about in that episode.
Really?
Huh. Yeah.
Now I'm really kind of
it's weird.
That's
weird.
Interesting. I kind of want to watch The Vanishing.
If they both occurred in the same episode, then I think that there's definitely
it's a reference.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a reference, definitely.
Yeah.
And that's, they really found a good way to work within that. Like that fly episode is really good in a different sort of way for that show.
Yeah, yeah, really different.
It's almost like theater, where it's just them.
Yeah, kind of. I thought it was great.
Right, awesome. So I was thinking. Sorry to cut you guys short. I was thinking of doing a creative writing session. Finally, does that sound good to all of you?
Sure.
Okay, cool. Which means that I can. Sorry, guys.
They can't be privy to this?
Can't be privy to this, unfortunately.
They're going to love all the sound of, you know, typewriter, keyboards.
Oh, we're doing the writing. I thought we were doing the
no.
talk
and stuff. Nah, we can't do it. All right, guys, so see you later. Bye.
And Flash Gordon was there in silver underwear.
And that's it, guys. I decided not to continue recording our actual creative writing exercises is mostly because I don't want any original content of the other people in the group to be released publicly, unless they're comfortable with it. If they're comfortable with it, then I'll have them record their stories or their scripts or whatever on the podcast. But if they're not, I'd rather be on the safe side in general and just not put that on. But I will share what I came up with. Essentially, the exercise was comedy-themed. This particular month was comedy. We talked about comedy and comedy scripts and films and stories and what makes comedy good. At least that was the goal. And the creative writing exercise for this particular meeting was essentially a case of mistaken identity. We had about 15 minutes to write a story or a script or something creative and original that had something to do with a case of mistaken identity and also comedy. So what I did was, after thinking for about 10 minutes, because comedy is not my strength, I hardly ever write anything comical. A lot of the scripts and short stories that I write tend to be a lot darker or serious in nature, and I just struggle with it, which is actually why I decided to try comedy for this month, because I was interested in actually trying to write comedy. Anyway, my case of mistaken identity was kind of a weird tale. Essentially, the premise is an old woman, an old grandmother of sorts, is interrupted from her dinner in front of the television by a handsome man who she thinks is her son, who hasn't visited her in a really long time. But in reality, he's actually a male prostitute who has accidentally gone to her house and thinks that she's a client. So all sorts of wacky hijinks ensue. I didn't quite finish it, of course, because it took me a long time to come up with the idea, and I only had about 5 minutes to write it, so I wrote it as quickly as possible. I don't quite have it worked out. I don't think it's going anywhere. I also think the premise is kind of wacky and crazy and kind of disgusting, to be honest with you, but hey, whatever. Yeah, that's the nature of comedy, isn't it? It's supposed to be absurd and occasionally a little bit disturbing. All right, so yeah, that's pretty much it. That was essentially the end of the writers' meeting. We just shared our various stories, and then we went on our merry way. I don't know how often I'm going to be doing these writing classes, these writing groups. I don't know how many of these I'm going to be putting up there, but, you know, it all depends on the guests and what topic we're talking about on any given day. And, you know, if there's anything that I think is interesting or worth putting up on the podcast that we talk about, you know, because everything that we do talk about is incredibly brilliant and genius and creative, but, you know, there's only so much that we can put into an episode before it just becomes a bit too random and chaotic. You know, as you notice, there's not one specific topic. We're just constantly bouncing around. So, yeah, we'll see. If you enjoyed this episode, I imagine future episodes will be exactly like this. Maybe, you know, with completely different topics. Of course, obviously, but anyway, that's it for this episode. Thank you very much for listening. I appreciate it, as always. If you have any comments or suggestions or feedback or anything like that, please email me at hollowcast@ymail.com. That's HOLLOWCAST at YMAIL.com. That's Y as in the letter Y, not Y as in, you know, why me? Or you can leave a voicemail at 1-818-698-1402. That's just voicemail. No one will pick up the phone. You can leave whatever kind of message. If you have any questions for me, or if you have any ideas for topics, or if you want to, I don't know, talk about movies or writing, or if you're a writer and want to discuss what you're writing or anything like that, you know, I don't know, just call and leave a message. And also, you can follow me on Twitter at Alan Twitt. That's AllenTwitt. Also, I recently added this to iTunes, so we actually don't have any reviews at the moment, which is very sad. So I hope to change that in the future, and for the better, you know, like I hope that people come on there and write excellent reviews, awesome reviews, and get the word out and let other people listen in on the various things that me and my guests have to say about writing and entertainment in general and whatever random topics we happen to be discussing. So iTunes, yeah, leave a review. If you go in the podcast section and you search Hollywood Hollow, you should be able to come up to our page. And we're also on Podcast Alley and Podcast Pickle. You can look us up on both sites. If you look us up on Podcast Alley, you can actually leave a review or vote for us. And the voting is just a matter of clicking vote here or just vote and I'll get a vote. And I guess the podcast with the most votes get higher on the list of top podcasts. So yeah, if you have time and you feel like it, please go to podcastalley.com and find us and leave a review, a good review, and a vote. And same with Podcast Pickle, although I don't think you can leave reviews of Podcast Pickle or vote for them, but I'm not sure. Anyway, this has gone on way. This outro has been almost as long as the actual episode itself. I apologize. Thank you very much for tuning in. Goodbye. They got caught in a celluloid jam, then at a deadly pace, it came from outer space, and this is how the message ran.